As we see emerging news reports about the rise in flu, RSV, and COVID-19 this year, the need to focus on effective hygiene programs is critical today. Businesses, facilities, and organizations need help creating more hygienic spaces that can support a more productive workforce. They see the need. They recognize the positive impact that a clean and hygienic workplace and environment provides. What they need, though, is assistance in completing this puzzle to get all of this accomplished. All of this is brought to you in this special edition of Straight Talk. To dig into today's topic, I welcome Brian Leafblad, the R&D Senior Manager, Global Business Solutions at Reckitt's Lysol Pro Solutions. Welcome to the program, Brian. I hope you're doing well today.
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And I know today's topic is very timely with what we're seeing today with infections and people being sick and what we can do about it. To set this up, Brian, why don't you talk a little bit about the work you do, your expertise, and why we're here today?
Sure. My background is in chemistry. I'm a scientist. That's what I've been doing for quite a few years. I joined Reckitt a little over 3.5 years ago and managed the R&D program for Lysol Professional business. So Reckitt is known as a CPG company. Our business, though, we are focused on the professional cleaning and disinfection industry, which has been essentially my entire career. So I've been with Reckitt about 3.5 years, a little over 27 years total in the industry. As I mentioned, I'm a scientist, a chemist, so my background and experience really is in the technology behind how do we make it work, how do we find solutions, how do we deliver results to this industry, and then going through the creation invention process to actually deliver those results.
Well, I look forward to talking about that because I'm interested in how you get things done there. So this is going to be a cool discussion.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. But to start off with, Brian, can you touch on the trends we're seeing in respiratory virus activity this winter?
I mean, respiratory virus activity really isn't a surprise to anybody, right? I mean, we're used to it. You get to this time of the year and we're used to thinking about cold and flu season. And obviously, we've been dealing with COVID for a few years now. So it's not really surprising that we're experiencing some of this. What is a little bit unique is more the combination of the particular illnesses that are all happening to hit concurrently now. You know, so in the past, we would tend to focus mainly on cold and flu. Well, now we do have cold and flu going on. We also have RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, and we have COVID all going on at the same time. So one of the things we did is partner with the folks at Blue Dot towards the end of last year to process all of the reams and reams of data that is out there to really try and understand what is going on. And one of the things that we found is they said all of those are increasing and kind of hitting at the same time. So seasonal influenza activity is up. And that's one thing I should make sure to clarify, you know, that when we talk about flu, we're actually talking about influenza, right? I mean, I don't know if this was the same for you, but when I was a kid, I would talk about getting the flu and it was really a stomach bug. It wasn't actually influenza. But when we're talking about the flu now, this is caused by various strains of the influenza virus, which is a respiratory situation. But those numbers are up. Just this last week, CDC is showing that there was a 1 week decrease in infection rates. So hopefully that's a positive indicator, but it's a little too early to say at this point. Overall, influenza is up quite a bit. And there's been over 14 million people getting sick in the country this year, and 9,400 have died from it. So we tend to think of the flu as a minor thing, but it can be a very, very serious condition for folks who get it. COVID, again, we've been dealing with that for a few years and it goes up and down. It is back up again. There is a more recent JN1 variant that has come out that is really growing in terms of its prevalence in infection rates in the country. So COVID is not going away. That is still definitely out there, and it's so CDC will look at things like infection rates, hospitalization rates, as well as doing some wastewater testing. They can actually measure the presence of viruses in wastewater for a particular geography, and from that get an idea of what to expect as far as infection rate trends based off of what's in the water. And one of the factors that's really contributing to this is, I think, what a lot of people are referring to kind of as COVID fatigue. People are tired of thinking about it, talking about it, dealing with it, and frankly, immunization rates are down. This latest round of immunizations that are available, currently they're projecting less than 25% of adults in the US have received the latest vaccination. So if we're not staying up to date on those, people are going to continue getting sick. And a very similar story with RSV. So influenza, COVID, and RSV are three of the more severe situations going on right now, but RSV is very similar, particularly in facilities that cater to children or older adults, people that could be immunocompromised. RSV can be a very, very hazardous condition to have. And the numbers are up in the southern hemisphere, which is a predictor for what then moves up here. Generally, we can take a look at trends that are happening in the southern hemisphere and look at infection rates in like Chile, Brazil, Uruguay, and then from there have an idea of where things are likely to trend here in the US. And that's the movement that we're seeing most recently.
It's good that we can see that and you can respond to it, but this is bad news, Brian.
It
So
is. It is. In a way, I mean, it's we don't want to just try and scare people
right.
into doing a lot of unnecessary things, but it can be a particularly serious season of particularly for people that are in the more vulnerable parts of the population. Absolutely.
So thank you for all that, and that's great information. No one wants to get a flu shot or a COVID shot, but it's important to do. So
Right.
that's individually. Can we talk about what businesses can do in response to all this to protect their facilities and the people coming into those facilities?
Sure. One of the things that I would say, which might be a little bit surprising because this isn't directly tied to cleaning and disinfection process or products necessarily, but it's really about the policy of how we run our workplaces and treat our workers. Right? When people start to get sick with influenza, COVID, RSV, they're probably not going to know what they have. So they're not necessarily going to know, oh, I caught COVID again. They're just going to start to feel crummy. And so having policies and procedures where when folks start to get sick, they stay home is one of the biggest things that we can do. When COVID was at its height and it was at its most severe, we saw the infection rates for other respiratory conditions like RSV and influenza go way down because people were taking so many precautionary measures to avoid getting COVID. It had a secondary effect of preventing some of the transmission of the more traditional viruses. People aren't being as careful anymore. So we're exposing ourselves and each other to these viruses again. So if a person is getting sick, that would be one of the first things. Send them home. Tell them to stay home. It'll go better for them and also minimize the transmission around the workplace. But within the workplace, then, we can't 100% protect from infectious people coming into work. Sometimes they may not even know that they're infectious. So it's not all about people just having ill intent or not caring, right? A lot of times you don't know that you have something when you first have it. So people can be infectious. So within the workplace, then, especially for cleaning and disinfection professionals, is focus on the spaces and surfaces where the most people are at, and the spaces and surfaces, particularly that they're touching the most. So we often talk about high touch point places. This can be something like a doorknob or a handrail or a copier or something like that, where you have a lot of foot traffic coming through. People touch it over and over again. Also, it can be surfaces that are really hard to clean, like an elevator button or a coffee pot handle or something like that, where it's not necessarily smooth or flat, and any little nooks and crevices in there can harbor germs. So the first thing is to really focus on those spaces where the most people are going to be touching and working, and focus there. And then the second one is to make sure that you are using EPA-approved disinfecting products in those spaces and surfaces that we were just talking about. Any product that any supplier is going to sell you, if it has those words of disinfectant, disinfection, any claims like that on it, will have to be registered with EPA. And on their labels, you can find the EPA registration number for that specific product. Get out, use your favorite search engine online, search that EPA number, and you can find what's called the MTL, the Master Text Label. That is a master document that contains all of the efficacy and claims information for that specific product. So you can read through that. It's publicly available for free, and make sure that the product you're using has been registered with EPA and carries the claims for the type of environment you're operating in. For example, RSV, we talked about before, particularly facilities where there's a lot of children around or older folks that might be more immunocompromised. If that's the kind of facility you're working in, go find the MTLs for your products, read through them, make sure they have an RSV claim. If they don't have an RSV claim, then you should look for a different product. And you can do that type of an analysis for the type of environment that you're in. The second part of that then is, once you have a product that has the claims you need, make sure you're following the usage instructions for that particular product. If it's a concentrate, dilute it at the right ratio. Once you get down to your use solution, whether it's an RTU or you've now diluted it, make sure you're applying the product the way the usage instructions tell you to, and you're keeping that surface wet for the contact time that's required. If you don't follow those steps, your intentions will be good and you'll think you're getting germ kill and efficacy, but you're not. So make sure you follow the manufacturer's process and recommendations and how to do it to make sure you're doing it right.
Thinking about all those in facilities are using products such as from Lysol Pro Solutions. Some might wonder, how does it all come about? How does your research and development process work from identifying a problem, which you've just outlined, to finding a solution? Can you talk to us about that?
It has to start with a fundamental understanding of the customer base that you're trying to supply and what their needs are. So, a lot of times people will think of someone like myself as a chemist, that we're just in the laboratory wearing a lab coat and goggles and trying not to blow stuff up. And that there is an element of that that's true. I love being in the laboratory and running tests, making it, doing experiments, and seeing what I can learn from that. That is absolutely part of the process. But before we can get to that stage, we have to know where we're starting from. And that starts from really understanding how our customers think, how they work, how they live, what actually matters to them. And so if you think, cleaning and disinfection, a lot of times people will think, well, the products I use at home, if it works at home, I can just take it to work and use it at work. They don't always work that way, right? The soil loads in your house or your apartment are going to be a whole lot less than what you would encounter in an office building or in a grocery store or in another retail location. The surfaces are different. The amount of soil and germs are there are much more varied. I mean, it's what I have in my house when it's just me, my family, and close friends around is going to be very different than if I go to a stadium to watch a game and I've got 50,000 people around me. So it starts from that place of who are the customers we're trying to serve, and understanding not only what that environment is, but then the folks that are doing the cleaning and disinfection there, how does that work for them? How do they experience it? What is it like to walk around a stadium after a game has cleared out and all the fans have left, and now you're cleaning 250 bathrooms? Right? What is that experience? Cleaning one bathroom at home is very different from cleaning 250 in a building after 50,000 people have used them. So that's the initial part. Understand who we're trying to help and serve. And then from there, we can identify what are the opportunities? What are the levers we can potentially pull that would make their jobs easier, make their jobs more effective, make it work better for them in how they do their work? And so from there, we can then list out what we call KPIs, key performance indicators. These are the performance and experience attributes that we want the product to have, and we'll just create a list. These are the priority ones. These are the must-haves. These are the nice-to-haves. These are the, if we can get them, great, but we're not going to worry about it, right? And from there, we translate into then technical performance. Right. So, for example, if we're trying to speed up disinfection because we know our customers have to clean 250 bathrooms and they can't afford to stand around for a 10-minute dwell time on a disinfectant, we need to speed it up. So, we would set that KPI to our desired time target. Then we would look at what types of active ingredients actually work fast enough that we could possibly hit that time target. And then from there, we start to build a prototype formulation that would combine that active ingredient in concentrations with all of the other supporting ingredients that go into a product. And then we try it. And then at that point, it becomes a more typical, what you might think of with a scientific process. We create a prototype with our theory, we test it. We evaluate the data, see how well it did or didn't work. Then we back up and we tweak it. We change it. We run it again. We analyze the data. We tweak it. And we will cycle through that process as many times as we need to in order to get to an end result that delivers on all of those KPIs from the list that we had created at the beginning.
Well, that's a lot more that goes into it than I thought. So thank you for that. That's interesting how you go through that process. Now I have to wonder, as a research professional like yourself, how do you stay updated on the latest developments in cleaning and hygiene research? What you just described is what you do. There's got to be a lot out there. What do you do to keep it all straight?
It is hard. There is a lot, absolutely. And so part of what we'll do is collaborate with colleagues both inside Reckitt, inside my company, as well as outside. Like I said at the very beginning, I'm a chemist. That's where my expertise lies in how can I formulate, test, evaluate products to then deliver on the performance features. I'm not a microbiologist, but we have some very, very intelligent microbiologists in our company that I can go to and say, "Hey, what are you seeing? You know, what's the latest developments in active ingredient technologies? What are you seeing from information from CDC and EPA and the WHO?" Right? We have folks like that, that their background is microbiology, or it's regulatory, or it's public health. And so between all of us together, we can each keep up with somewhat smaller subsegments of what's out there. And then combined, we can bring it all together to say, "Hey, I'm seeing this, you're seeing this, she's seeing that. How do we connect all of those pieces together into a coherent story?" So that's one way that we do it is broad collaboration both within and outside the company. Another part of it is regular conversations with our customers. And that sometimes that can be through an activity like the ISSA annual, like the show. I've been going to the ISSA show now for probably 15 years. And it's a great place that you can sit down and talk with the people who actually use the products that I'm trying to create. So I can hear directly from them what their job is like, what their day is like. If they're part of an overnight crew that shows up at 9 p.m. to clean a building, what that's like for them and what they need. And so we can get it direct from the people who are actually using and experiencing our products, what it's like for them. So that's a great source of information as well.
Thank you for that. Got to keep it all straight, and that can be a challenge, I can see. But you're doing it for us, so appreciate that. Let's talk about any recent breakthroughs or innovations in cleaning and hygiene, research and development that you've been involved in or that you're excited about. Anything top of mind you'd like to share?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I would say to that. Well, two main ones in particular. And one is something you might not necessarily think about directly. Again, as a chemist, you would expect me to be in the lab formulating, which is true, but tying it back to what I was saying before about understanding our customers and their world and their experience, the process by which they use our products is vitally important. And that's something that the repercussions of COVID and the world shutting down and then trying to reemerge and business policies and how all of those things relate really had a massive effect on process for cleaning and disinfection. And so, it's our industry tends to be a fairly stable, constant one. You find a good product, find a good process, and use it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Why change something that's working? And so when we find something that we can depend on and that we can trust, then we tend to run with it. COVID and the resulting impact onto society after it has thrown all of that up in the air, and it kind of forced us to reevaluate a lot of those processes that we typically will use in cleaning and disinfection. And one particular area is how can we flex with the changing needs of a dynamic workforce? And this is something that we worked with Dave Frank on, who's the president of the American Institute for Cleaning Sciences, which is to understand when a company has a hybrid work policy, and you might have portions of your employees coming in on Monday. You might have some of them who are also there on Tuesday, but now more people come in on Tuesday, and it's a constantly changing mix of people as well as numbers of people. How does that affect the traffic flow, the soil load, and the contamination risk in that building? And so if we start from trying to understand that and kind of model that out, we can then use it to target those spaces and surfaces that we talked about earlier that are going to be the most important to deal with. If you only have 25% of your employees in and they're randomly scattered across a building, that's going to be a whole lot harder to take care of than if you have 25% of your employees in and they're primarily congregated in a quarter of your space. Right, we can then tailor the processes to where the people are and how many of them are there. And the overall objective with that is making sure that we are cleaning and disinfecting the spaces where the people actually are. And two, we're not wasting time and we're not wasting money and we're not using extra chemicals that people don't need to use. If your building space isn't being used, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever to clean and disinfect it every hour on the hour. You're just wasting product time and money to do it. So there's a very common sense, practical reason behind it all, but it gets at the point of like, how do we understand what's actually happening in our building and then tailor our cleaning and disinfection processes to address the needs of that particular building. So that's one part. The second one that I would say is some studies that we have worked in with some external partners, which lead us to a way to track the spread of organisms around a building. Right? So there's a technique called QMRA, which allows us to take basically a non-infectious organism. So if people touch it or ingest it, they're not going to get sick. It won't cause any problems. And we can use that as a surrogate to model if an employee comes in and they have influenza or they have RSV and they touch the doorknob or the door handle to open the door, they go in and go about their day. Now you follow in behind them, you touch that same doorknob, and now any germs that they had left on the doorknob, some of them are now on your hand. Now you walk to your office or your workstation. You touch your computer mouse and start to work. Now those germs are on your mouse. Now you go use the restroom and the push plate on the door now has some of those germs on it. Well, now I come behind you. I go to that same restroom. I touch the push plate you just touched. Now they're on my hand as well. So it's that type of connected behavior of the surfaces and spaces that we touch. We're able to model how organisms are spread around a space, which then understanding that those connections in the flow allows us to connect back to the first point of creating the process for cleaning and disinfecting that specifically addresses the most important areas that we need to address. So those I would say are the two big ones that have been more recent. A third one is more of a constant, is just the evolution of active ingredients and chemical ingredients. Raw material suppliers that we work with, that we buy our components from, they also are constantly working to innovate and improve their products that they supply to us and to other suppliers. So partnering with them to see what are some of the newest technologies that they have, and then adding that into our experimental mix that, like we had talked about earlier, to see will those help us achieve the performance objectives that we're looking for.
Well, Brian, some might think that Lysol makes products, but you do a lot more than that.
Yes, we do. I mean, in the end, yeah, that's exactly what we do, is we make products. But if we make a product that people don't want or won't use, or it's too difficult to use, or they don't like using it for whatever reason, they're not going to, right? I mean, I have an incredibly brilliant team of scientists that does a lot of this work with me. They can come up with some incredibly fantastic solutions, and we enjoy it as scientists figuring that all out. But if it stops there, it doesn't do anybody any good. We've just played around in the laboratory for a while and created something. If it doesn't actually deliver benefit to the people we're trying to reach, then it falls short for us. So absolutely connecting the science to the real world experience of our customers, their patrons and customers in their building, all of that is absolutely fundamental to what we do.
Yeah, sounds like full service consulting, helping facilities, those in them do their work with the science to prove what they should do. Well, Brian, I've enjoyed our conversation today. I just have one final question. Just invite you. Do you have any parting words of advice, things you'd like to see those watching our program to do right now?
Yeah, I would say that there's two main things. If you are a cleaning and disinfection person, if you're in EVS, if you're a facility manager, this is what you do, is work in and care about and take care of this industry. We know how much care and time and effort you put into that, right? So it's not a question of intent or effort behind it. Sometimes it can be that our industry particularly on the science side, can move very quickly, very fast, right? We saw it in the response to COVID when that was at its peak, particularly. So it can be very hard to keep up with what some of the latest and greatest is and what the options could be for you to use in your facilities. So the first thing I would say is talk to your suppliers, right? If your suppliers can't help you understand what you're dealing with and help you deliver the process and the products that you're going to need to do your jobs well, find yourself another supplier because they should be able to do that. That's part of my job. It's part of our job at Lysol Pro Solutions is helping our customers get the results they need to get. It's not just about selling a product and then we walk away and go find somebody else to sell to, right? So if you're the professionals that are actually doing this work, find somebody who can help you with that because they're out there and they should be able to do that to provide that value. Then the second thing I would say is if you're more of a customer or a patron in this industry where you're not necessarily doing all of that work yourself, take a look around you and pay attention to the folks that are, because there's a lot of people out there that give a lot of time and effort into cleaning and disinfecting our public spaces and doing that to deliver results that make it safer for us to go out and go shopping or go to a show or go to a concert or whatever you may do in your daily life. Take your kids to school. Those are normal types of life activities that we do are highly dependent on the people that are doing all of the cleaning and disinfection in our public spaces. So be aware, understand, and appreciate everything that those folks are doing. And when you get the chance, recognize them for it because they're doing an awful lot that enable us as a society to live the lives that we have.
Well, well said. Thank you, Brian, for this today. Great conversation. I think it's time to let you go back to your laboratory and your white coat and create something that we need in our facilities. Thank you.
Thank you.